Hi, everybody. This is Mike Fenoya from Amigos. The global health crisis we're facing right now has threatened the livelihood and mental health of countless musicians and comedians like me. Woohoo. Backline is the music industry's mental health and wellness resource hub, and their work is more vital than ever. Launched in 2019, Backline aims to give artists, crew, and their families quick and easy access to mental health and wellness resources. Backline is currently hosting virtual support groups as well as yoga, meditation, and breathwork sessions. Osiris and me, Mike Fenoya, host of Amigos, is proud to partner with Backline. To donate, learn more, or get in touch for personalized care, visit backline.care. And remember, folks, you're never alone. Take care of yourselves.
What's up? This is Mike Fenoya from Amigos, and Amigos Podcast is In The Loop, the legion of Osiris Podcasts. Osiris is creating a community that connects people like you with podcasts and live experiences about artists and topics you love. Check out OsirisPod.com and stay in the loop.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Amigos, live from lockdown. It's your host, Mike Fenoya. We're here on the Osiris Network, as always, here with, this is the Steves tonight, dinner and two Steves. We've got the dude of life, Steve Pollock, here with me. What's up, brother? How are you?
So good to see you. Good to see you, Steve. And I just want to wish everyone good health and stay safe during this time.
Yeah, yeah, man. It's been too much.
And my pal from New York, bringing us the news and holding it down in Manhattan, Steve Lacy, return guest to Amigos. Good to see you, my friend. Yeah,
good to see you too, man. Good to see anybody at this point, right? As Steve Lacy say.
It's so good to see anybody. It's so weird, you know, like comedy, which is my gig, and the TV show, the Impractical Jokers, is obviously done for now, and we had to do a virtual, a Zoom stand-up comedy show today for a charity. And I tell you, it's the weirdest thing. I mean, I'm sitting in sweatpants on my, you know, like trying to tell jokes. And it's like, I've got no timing. I've got no like crowd, the crowd's muted.
Yeah, it's almost like the same scenario when every comedian hates when someone's like, say something funny.
Yeah.
Out of that version of that, there's no interaction. There's no interplay.
Yeah, there's absolutely like, nothing. No. Yeah. Just go, well, do it.
You know, the crowd is a big part of it. And whether you're doing comedy or music, the crowd helps. It's the generator in many ways.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I was talking with my dad, which, I mean, how weird is that? I mean, I think this thing is making, like, us talk to family and stuff. But it's nice. It's good to do. But I was talking about how comedy, I feel like someone took my medicine away. Like, really, this year has been such an incredible year of stand-up, and, I mean, it just, whoop, it's gone now. So, it's weird.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking of you because I was thinking of people, you know, you get involved in something like comedy, which is the longest of long shots to begin with. You start making your own momentum. You're actually doing it. So, already you're ahead of 98% of the people who get into it. And then, boom, the rug just gets yanked out of nowhere. Same thing with music, any sort of performing art. It just... it's got to be so demoralizing.
Yeah, it's killing me. And, you know, like my wife's a nurse. She's in the hospital working with COVID patients every single day. And when she comes home, like I try all day to, I put on cartoons and listen to the Grateful Dead all day long. Mm-hmm. No offense to the news, but I'm avoiding it like the plague right now because I can't see numbers. I don't like watching tickers of death counts. It's just not my world. I'd rather, you know, there's Good News Network where you can see how the air pollution has gone down and water pollution has gone down. That's the stuff I like to see.
Yeah, no, I think you should be strategic with your news intake. I think there is a certain point where more is less and you really got to sort of balance your mental health into just your knowledge base for sure. I agree with that.
And also I think that even though, yes, there's a lot of negativity out there, we have to all stay positive and whatever situations we're in, we all have to make the best of it. And it's not easy, but we got to do it because, I mean, this will come to an end and hopefully that'll be the end of it. But
yeah,
we can get back to normal, and we can get back to doing stand up, and we can get back to our normal lives.
Get back to hanging out before the last time the three of us hung out was at the Garden. Before, what was it, the 30th, I believe? It was
before the 30th, and now the Penzi's gone. The last night of the Penzi was going to be the Pearl Jam show. That, remember, we were joking about, like, you couldn't get tickets. It was $500 a ticket for the worst seat in the house, and then...
We were talking about it.
I know. We were going to send out the Penzi with a bang, and then the show got canceled, and now we're living in a whole new world. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's really wild. Mm-hmm. What are you doing, Steve? The dude, Steve. I have to go Steve P here to pass the time.
You can call me dude.
All right, dude. How are you passing the time? Like, what are you up to? Like,
well, you know, I've actually been pretty busy because I teach music therapy to kids with special needs. So I've been making some music videos for them. And I do that at Cedar Place Elementary in Yonkers and also at Roosevelt High School. So that's been keeping me busy. On top of, I've been organizing a lot of stuff around my house, organizing stuff that I never thought I'd be able to organize. So that's actually been a godsend because, my God, organizing my garage and organizing the basement and my drawers at home, you know, it's really phenomenal. So that's an upside. That's a silver lining.
It's a silver lining. That's fantastic. It's so cool that you do that. And I mean, has that been, I mean, that's got to be so rewarding. Have you found that the way that you are interacting virtually, is it, how's that translating with the music, like with making videos and stuff? Is it like this in a meeting format, or are you making them and sending them out?
Well, similar to what you were speaking of earlier, when you don't have an audience, it is definitely a different animal. Yeah. But, you know, it's kind of, it's a thing on its own. So, but then on top of that, I've been going on long hikes with the family. We have some wonderful trails around Croton where I live, and we've been having fun with that and hanging out with the dog and stuff. Yeah,
the dog of life. Oh, that's fantastic.
The dog's tough. I'm telling you, the dog will bite your head off. Yeah, I view myself as a dog whisperer. I met the dog once. He's like, "Don't mess with the dog. Don't mess with the dog." I'm like, "Yeah." And then he's like, "I told you."
What kind of dog?
He's called a Woodle, a Wheaton Terrier Poodle, and okay. He could be the sweetest guy in the world, and he can be a nutcase and. Just, you know, depends on what day you catch him.
Yeah. Well, Steve, you and I were talking, Steve Lacy, we were talking about our dogs and how they're looking at us in an odd way right now. You know, I'm on the road constantly. I have, I have a rescue that's a hound dog pit mix, and she's losing her vision in one of her eyes because she got bit by a tick. So when she goes out on a leash, like right now, everyone's walking their dogs, and I'm in Southern Connecticut, and it's like everyone's out. She sees other dogs. She's howling, and we have these CBD treats that are really a godsend. And every now and then, like when I'm doing a podcast, 45 minutes before, I kick her a couple of extra CBD treats to mellow her out. But yeah, I feel like she's looking at me like, get the fuck out of the house, dude. No. Like, what are you doing here?
CBD doesn't work on Ryder. He now knows what the treats smell like, and he hates being knocked out. Like, he resents that. He's like, that's bogus. I'll take a nap when I'm ready. So we really have to slide the CBD treats super discreet, or he'll just reject it outright.
Steve, what kind of dog do you have?
A golden doodle.
Oh, those are great. Sweet animals.
He's loving it. Honestly, we're around 24/7. Like, he could be up with us all day, every day. So this has been great for him. I mean, we're just around the house catering to his every need. I mean, he's psyched, you know. Yeah. I took him on a 3-hour park walk today because since we're trapped inside with him, you really need to wear him out during the day or he's just unbearable at night. So, I mean, it's been great for him.
You know, dude, you mentioned like remaining positive and how there is definitely like a lot of good coming through this, and you see families, you see children spending time sewing masks for nurses, or, you know, people getting together and doing what they can. I think about music and I think about live music. Last night, every Tuesday, you know, Fish throws us the dinner and a movie, and you could stream a show. Great. I mean, are you going back and watching these? And
oh yeah, I was watching Watkins Glen. I was there too. And just brings back all these memories. And part of it was, it just like seeing all these people in one place, I was like, it was making me sad because, God, that was so much fun. And I can't wait to do it again.
I know. It's weird how much that already seems like something from the 1950s, seeing people crammed in together, hanging out, shoulder to shoulder. It's like when I look back, even the pictures from MSG this year, I'm like, my God, look at all those people.
Yeah, I know.
And then also you have to think, you know, this might not be the last virus that we see. There could be the next strain or something worse, or maybe with all the global warming, it's going to defrost some weird virus that existed a million years ago. And our grandchildren might say to us, hey, remember those days when you could go to a concert and 20,000 people could all be in one place? Mm-hmm. And I hope it doesn't get to that, but that crazy possibility, you never know.
You never know. And that's the scary thing. And I think right now when I do have those moments of like taking a long walk or, you know, sitting at the water and reflecting and looking back and thinking about that, I looked at Tuesday night, like I waited for the minute they went on stage on my TV last night. I was transported back to exactly where I was standing at Watkins Glen at Magna Ball with the people that I was with. And I sent them a text, and it's almost like they telepathically knew I was sending them a message, and they sent back like, remember where we were. And like, I had tears in my eyes because it was, you know, I am so grateful for the hang that we had at Pensy and how much fun it was just to all stand together and, you know, have a beer and laugh and yell over the noise and just crack each other up. I mean, we're very blessed that we had the moments that we did.
Mm-hmm. So many fun times, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing, when I met Steve this summer, we were at some after party, and what we sort of connected on was the idea of the community that sprung up around Phish, particularly with social media, where now if you go to a show, you know, 50 people, no matter what venue it is, whereas like when I was 20, we'd go to shows, and you only knew the people you were there with, and maybe you'd meet someone there, but basically you wouldn't. Now you show up with a self-contained community, and how magical that whole thing's been. And to have it taken away is crazy. Like, you know, last night when the show started, I've got my Phish text thread of like seven other people, and I'm watching The Divided Sky during my dinner break, and I'm like, Jesus, when did Phish become this thing that makes me emotional and I want to be alone, half crying during it? It's like the emotion it taps into now is totally different and more poignant and whatever than it was when it was just a fun thing we never took for granted, but like you never thought it would be taken away in this manner, you know?
That's so true. And, you know, I was with Trey in boarding school when we were just talking about ideas for a rock band, and so I've been there from the beginning, and to see where it is now, it's just unbelievable. And all these amazing people who I've known for years, and some I just met a week ago, and all these amazing connections, it's like part of my DNA, you know. Yeah. It's our DNA, where we just have this amazing relationship, and it just keeps getting better, and that's not going away.
Never.
You know, some people have said that after the hiatus it'll be Phish 4.0, you know. We'll see what happens.
I mean, they have a whole repertoire of new tunes that are just phenomenal. I mean, with Trey's, you know, writing a song a day. I mean,
no matter what you do to Trey, like, he just creates more songs. You know, it's like, it's unbelievable how prolific he's been playing on his toilet paper and Purell bottles. New song every day on Instagram. It's unbelievable.
Dude, I, you know, you bring up the early days, and you know, the thing that I am honored to, you know, when we've hung a couple times and had a chance to laugh and joke around. I mean, your work with Trey in the early days, I mean, you kind of set the blueprint with him and the other guys and Tom and everybody that's like worked on the creative side of this. You gave us the soundtrack for, you know, to really kind of build this foundation. And I'm just pumped to be able to say thanks and be able to like bullshit with you and hang and, you know,
it's the best. It's the best. And we ain't done yet either.
You know? No, dude. No, there were,
we just begun.
You know, I wanted to ask you, and it's kind of an interesting thing now that, well, so I flew the first part of this year. I was on the road incessantly, and I was very happy because I always fly Delta, and between me and my mind happened to be a movie that Delta picked up. So I was able to watch the Trey documentary every time I flew. And there were times that I would play it. It was such a long flight, I'd start it over and watch it again. There's a fun part where Mike and Trey are going through old pictures, and there's that picture, and they go, that's the show with the dude. And it's you with a tapestry over your back. And it's become this like iconic image. It always has been an iconic image. But do you remember that gig?
Oh yeah, that was a fun one. That was a fun one. You know, it was a whole group of gigs where Trey was sitting in, and Fishman was playing drums, and and Mike sat in at the Paradise Club, and I think that's the photo you're talking about.
It's the one, sure, from one. Yeah, it's
oh, I think it's probably like the first gig one with like the bed sheet behind you.
You have a bed, yeah, there's a bed sheet behind you, and you're wearing that tapestry and kind of you got your arms
that's
up.
That's from the very early days. That's right. Yeah, that's going way back. That was like one of the first gigs, right?
That's super cool, man. Do you guys ever, do you keep in touch a lot? Are you in touch with Trey quite a bit? You guys check in on each other?
Trey, absolutely. And, you know, we've got such a deep friendship, and he's just a dear, dear friend of mine. He's like a brother to me.
Yeah. Well, Susie Greenberg was the song that got me into Phish. And I've always been excited, and I've always wanted to ask you. That's New Year's 93 was the first tape. I think Steve Lacy, I've told you this, that this was the first tape that anyone ever handed me in Italian class in high school. The guy I traded Grateful Dead tapes with goes, if you like the Dead, you'll love Phish. And he handed me New Year's 93. And it was rewound right to where Sparkle went into Susie Greenberg. And the just pop and the energy and the enthusiasm and the crowd and the crystal clear tape that I had, I was instantly hooked. And from this day to, you know, what, 25 years later, 26 years later, hundreds of shows later, Susie Greenberg has always been my very favorite Phish song, no matter what.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, it's a true story. I mean, Susie and I dated for a couple months when I was at Purchase College. And Trey and I had to take a sabbatical from University of Vermont. And during that time, I went to Purchase, and Susie was in my video making class. And so we kind of hit it off, and one thing led to another. And what happened was she broke up with me, and I was very upset. And so I wrote this song. And, you know, about 5 years later, we dated again, but the magic was gone. So I ended it the second time. But then,
with that song too, though, I actually think about that. Now that I know that that's a real song, it's fascinating how fragile the male ego is. Like, look how the hurt comes out as anger in the form of that song. It's fascinating.
No, but also, you know, and I try to analyze sometimes, like, why is one song really popular and one song doesn't go anywhere at all? And one key about that song, I think it's kind of like where love meets hate. Mm-hmm. And it's that amazing connection there, like an explosion almost. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, you figure you're in your late teens and that all the hormones are raging. And so something that you'd handle much differently when you're in your mid-20s or 30s or 40s or any age, but right in that teenage time is a crucial hormonal.
Everything's the most important, powerful thing on earth when it's happening when you're 90.
Right. So that's how that song was born. And then it's really funny because this must have been like 15 years ago. I was working in New York City and I went into one of those bodegas and there was Susie sitting there. So I said, "Hi, Susan, how you doing?" And she said, "Hey, did you write a song about me?" And I said, "Yeah, I did. I sang it for you at the time, but you didn't think much of it." Then, like, the wheels started turning in her head, and she said, "Did you ever make any money?" She said, "Was that on an album?" And at the time, it had never been on an album. I said, "No," because she was thinking about royalties.
Whoa, no shit.
So at that time, luckily, it had never been on an album, and so I didn't have to get sued by Susie Greenberg.
The woman does still walk the streets like she's the queen of the town.
Yes, she does. And interestingly, it turns out she got married and changed her last name to Sar, Susan Sar. But, you know, that never would have worked as a song. Susie Sar.
That's so funny. Now, you know, I always wonder when it comes to, like, you know, the collaboration with, you know, you look at like Garcia and Hunter and you look at like Tom and Trey and you and Trey, like, I know everybody must have done it different. When you would bring lyrics to you know, you write something, was your process always like, here's lyrics? Or with you being a musician and a player, would you bring a song that was like, hey, I hear this in A minor, or here's the progression? Like, would you What was that like? What's the collaboration like?
Well, Mike, it's really interesting that you're asking this because not many people have asked me this before, but Trey and I talked about it, and Trey said to me, he said, you know, the way Tom and I work is very different than the way we work together, because Tom has a bunch of lyrics, but Trey really kind of incorporates his lyrics into a lot of music that he's created. But sometimes I'll come with a whole song that basically gets Treyized, as I say, you know, and he'll rework it, but it's almost like a sculpture that's, you know, three quarters completed. And so it's just a very different manner in which we work together.
Wow.
So whether you're talking Architect or Show of Life or, you know, Like an Antelope.
Yeah. I mean, I think about that with, you know, Show of Life, like, it's you, like, it's something that, you know, look, I was someone who the Dude of Life and Fish. I mean, when I had a job at a record store, in high school called Coconuts or Strawberries. It was always named after fruit, yeah. Which I never understood, but yeah. I worked at Strawberries and I used to rob the place blind. My manager was a chain smoker. And anytime he would go in back, I would take whole sections of the store and just steal them and bring them in my car. And when I got into Fish, Due to Life and Fish was one of the first albums that I listened to, like, start to finish, and like Crimes of the Mind and TV Show and She's Bitching Again and all that. Like, I love those songs so much. And I remember that being like an early fabric in my Fish lexicon. And then hearing like A Show of Life and Architect and some of these other tunes, it's like your songs have a very distinct, like, dude flavor to them.
I guess, you know, and but you know, it, for me, it's, I'm always excited about what I'm gonna do next week or next year. You know, it's the entertainment business. Like, what have you done for me lately? You know, so
totally.
So I'm excited about a bunch of songs that I want to get into top shelf recorded form, and that's one of my big goals over the next 2 years, to make a really amazing album with Wonderful. A top producer.
I'm super excited. We're all super excited to hear it. Steve Lacy. It's gonna rock hard. Gonna rock, man. It's gonna kick ass. Steve Lacy, you had a chance, and I was running late, but you had a chance to catch the dude live, right?
Oh,
during
yeah.
during the yeah. run. During the yeah.
What you did, there was the dude pre-show at Hill Country. That was what, night two, I think. Yeah, the 29th, right? When you did the,
what? Was it night one or night two?
It was night two. It was night two. Pretty sure. Yeah, yeah. No, it was fun. It was like a bunch of dead tunes. We took over the bottom floor. It was great. It was interesting seeing, because I didn't realize you were a guitar player too, particularly. You know what I mean?
I play rhythm.
Yeah. No, and he came out of full regalia. Yeah, we got to get a picture of the outfit from that night. It was classic. It was from the Dude Archives.
Oh yeah,
it was fun.
Yeah. That's kick ass.
And that the garb that I wore was actually from it was the original garb I wore at Wetlands when I played there with Fish.
Wow,
and Susie with them. Ah. So that's
I've had the honor of catching you sing Susie a couple times. I think actually in my home state, I'm in Connecticut. Is it New Haven Coliseum? Or Hartford Civic Center, one of them, I think you came out and sang Susie, and I was very happy about that. I think
that was fun. That was a fun time.
Yeah. Those are always great. But, you know, you bring up the Grateful Dead, and, you know, you played a bunch of some Dead tunes and stuff. Are you guys listening to, are you finding yourself in this time of kind of like, you know, we have the entire, like, the world's bibliography of music at our fingertips. You guys listening to anything new and unique? Are you going back and digging through old stuff you haven't listened to in a while?
I mean, I never listen to new stuff, really. Honestly, that's why, like, I love stuff I love. When this started, I've been listening to Days Between, like, on loop.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, there's like on Spotify, there's some like Oakland Coliseum compilation. Those like old apocalyptic Jerry ballads, you know.
Yeah, like the Morning Dews and
totally all that sort of stuff has been making a lot of sense.
So, well, it's interesting because, you know, as you know, John Prine just passed away. And I love John Prine, and I've been listening to so many of his songs, and it just he was a true genius songwriter. And I mean, just, you know, it's such a sad thing that he passed away, but his music is just bringing me a lot of happiness right now.
Mm-hmm. You know, dude, I'm happy you said that because I don't know whether it's Bill Withers, whether it's, Bowie when he left, John Prine, you tend to kind of go back and realize wow, that's just such an important ingredient in the recipe of like my musical mind and thought process. Mm-hmm. And you go back and it's almost like I unfortunately have this recurring, you know, pattern where once someone dies, I end up really diving deep. I don't know if anybody else does this, you know, like I
think everybody does that.
Everybody does it. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's this song Summer's End that John Prine wrote. I think it came out in like 2017 or 18. And it's on that album cover where it's just like his face and such an absolutely beautiful song. And like a lot of songs on this new Fish album, I think that this time that we're in and this weird tumultuous, the news and the health and the uncertainty, songs tend to bring have a new character to them. These lyrics, you know, like Summer's End is around the bend. And it's like just these things where it's like everything seems to fit with what we're all this uncertainty that we're dealing with right now. Mm-hmm. And
it's crazy how a lot of the new Fish album sort of syncs up too in ways that I'm sure they would never have anticipated even when they wrote it. And the thing I like about the new album is that since a lot of them have been in the rotation a lot over the years, it was familiar. I was just in a headspace where I wanted to sort of not have to work to absorb an entire album's worth of new material. Like, I remember how long it took for Fuego to sort of, I really worked at it. I'd go running in the park every day, and sort of it was a lot of new material to me. Whereas this already started familiar, and they tweaked it and put it in different directions, which was exactly what I think, just from what I could tell from everyone, is responded to it online, was what people wanted at this time. You know, it felt like comfort food, but elevated and different twists on things we were already familiar with. But great versions, unexpected versions of it, you know?
Absolutely. And also, you know, the fact that the songs were seasoned, but then they went into the barn and they got these amazing jams that it's very hard to capture that live feeling when, hello?
Yeah, you're here. Yep.
So it's very, very hard to capture that live feeling when, you know, in when you're in the studio.
Yeah.
And they did that successfully, like more so than on any other album they've done in a long, long time, I think.
I couldn't agree more. I think that this this brings me back to like when Story of the Ghost came out, where like it felt like an entire piece. Those songs stand alone perfectly, but this album just had like, I don't know, man, the songs that I find myself going back to, Evening Song and Leaves, and you know, some of these tunes that, you know, I mean, of course, yes, Steam and Everything's Right and all of these songs are wonderful and I love all of them. I can start to finish listen to this album and then just go back right on repeat. But the songs that I'm finding are really sticking out to me are the ones that are like, you know, just Leaves and Approach the Night with Caution and some of these weird lyrics that are so cryptic but so timely and poignant and beautiful. And Steve, dude, like you said, those jams that they captured in the sound of this album is like, just they sound like big. Fish.
Yeah, I know, it's big, right? They got Mercury on there finally. I feel like a lot of pent up aggression towards Bob Ezrin or whoever did Big Boat has sort of come out now, like this is how it was supposed to be done. You know, it's interesting. One of my litmus tests is too, like my wife, for someone who's not into Fish, has absorbed so much secondhand Fish. She has a pretty decent knowledge base. Yeah. With this album, I'll throw it on Sonos and we can make it the whole way through. And then finally, this is a true story, at the end of Thread, when it just starts going into that dark jam, she's like, okay, enough. Like, made it 95% of the way. And I was like, you know what? That's fair. This is getting like, this is pro level Fish jamming right here. I get it. Like,
yeah,
we made it most of the way through and she liked it.
Yeah, it was fabulous seeing Mercury really done in such an amazing way.
Oh my God. Yeah, it was really beautiful. And it is kind of funny with the way that it ends with Thread, because that album is a lot of, you know, even with Life Beyond a Dream, and, you know, some of like, don't give up hope and keep dreaming. And then the last song is just, you're alone, you're alone. And it's just such like a fish just being like, yeah, fucking just laugh it off, man. Everyone's right. Gonna be, you know?
Yeah, we're not, we haven't gone fully dad rock. Like there's still some edge here. And if you come in the wrong headspace, we're going to leave you sending, you know, in a weird place, which I love, you know.
But there are lyrics to take your mask off, but now we got to keep our masks on for now.
Keep our masks on. That's absolutely right.
You know what I think is wild, too? It's like you're seeing a lot online. Like, everyone hated Ticketmaster and StubHub going into this whole thing to begin with. And now there's been that New York Times article where basically everyone's sitting on the money because no one wants to give the money back. It's going to be interesting to see what form the concert industry is in after this whole thing settles. Because you've got Ticketmaster being like, hey, we just provide a service. It's actually the venue, but you couldn't get the money back from the venue. StubHub's in the same boat. No one wants to give the money back because if they give that money back and there's no show for a year,
right?
You know, they could be out of business. It's wild.
Dude, I'd love to hear your thoughts. And I got to.
It's a crazy situation because, you know, going back even further, you know, bands used to make their money on records or CDs. That's where they made the most of their money. But then the industry changed and suddenly everyone was getting the music for basically for free. So bands started making the majority of their money doing live shows and merchandising. But now you're taking the live show out of it, at least temporarily. That changes things drastically. And it makes me think that probably the live webcast is going to be the next big thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very true.
It feels like though, you know, I feel like we're going to come out of this and it's like the big acts are going to be bigger. You're going to love Guns N' Roses when we're out of this. You're going to love Fish when we're out of it. But then I think like what happens to like the bands like Goose that were on the way up, had all this momentum, and then it just got totally pulled out from under them.
That's a tough.
Yeah, you know, it'll be interesting. It's almost like the bands are going to need like the Grateful Dead model where they have like a benefactor who pays for everything until they become famous. Like they're all going to need to find their, you know, whoever was Bear or Owsley and all that sort of stuff.
I think about it from the stand-up comedy perspective too, where, you know, you have these acts like a Jerry Seinfeld or a Bill Burr or Patton Oswalt or Chelsea Handler, Sarah Silverman, some of these folks that are doing Beacon Theater size rooms. You know, I think that they're going to probably go down to the comedy club level for a while people get used to large gatherings. Smaller gatherings are going to be first, you know, like the couple hundred people before a couple thousand people. Mm-hmm. And even before that, there's going to be the 10, 20, 30 people before the couple hundred people.
Mm-hmm. Mike, they also might need really big venues and everyone will have to stand like 20 feet apart from each other.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
It's going to be crazy. The MSG with 300 people.
There'll be big glass partitions.
Yeah. It's going to be like, we're all going to be behind that like drummer spit guard thing, you know, like in Roadhouse. It's weird. And you think about it and it's, you know,
we're developing this idea now. Like we should patent this because maybe we'll make like a certain, like large pods, like there'll be like 500 pods where you can placed inside the auditorium, you know, inside the venue.
And
you get assigned a certain pod and then you have to stay there the whole time. You might have to wear Depends or something, but
write the piss line. What do you do? Like, I mean,
you pee in your pod. I think that might be the thing to do. And also like you order your beers digitally and they come delivered underground and like up through like a, remember when you used to deposit money at the bank in a drive-thru?
Before ATMs, my mom, every Friday.
I love that. And then also there'll be a porta potty in every pod.
Ooh, a porto, a porta potty, P-O-D-D-Y.
There we go.
I love it. I think we did it. I think we figured it all out for sure.
We got it, baby.
to go back to what you were saying earlier too about Ticketmaster. Today I saw an interview with the president of Live Nation, and what they were saying was and I'd love your guys' thoughts on this. Now Live Nation, we have to think that's, you know, Ticketmaster, that's, you know, concerts, some sporting events. I mean, there's a lot under that umbrella, and it's universal. They are, you know, they're not, or I'm sorry, worldwide, not universal,
right.
But, they, have, you know, events in Spain, they have events in Mexico, they have events in France, America. They're talking about, like, after the vaccine, they think we might be able to get back to live, large scale.
I mean, meaning 2020,
18 months out.
2020 is written off. Yeah.
Yeah. 2020 is a wash. 2021 is when we see people starting to, you know, pile back into the Garden or into the O2 Arena in the UK or Coachella or a festival. What do you guys think about that? I mean, that's an entire year without live performance and probably into some of, you know, I mean, 18 months is summer or fall 2021.
As unfortunate as that is, I think it is pretty much it's pretty much going to be a reality because of all the things coming back. You know, restaurants will come back and you know, work placement will return. But I think concerts might be one of the last things to come back because you have so many people gathered together so closely. Mm-hmm. And that's going to take a while.
Right. So, I mean, I think even the most dedicated person's got to think twice, which is horrible. The idea of Madison Square Garden going in there and being like, geez.
Like waiting in line to take a leak.
All of it, you know? I've written it off for the rest of this year. And I almost view it like it would be amazing if we get it back by New Year's run 2021 into 22, you know? Yeah. I mean, I don't know anything. It's just my.
No, well, I know. I think about
it's
that.
Tough. It's a tough pill to swallow, but it's the reality.
You know, I think about it as a performer, and there was, you know, I did stand up in New York City all the way till like the second or third week of March. And basically, you know, down in a basement at the Comedy Cellar where that seats about 80, 90 people, and you have to walk through, you know, very narrow hallway, and everyone's sitting elbow to elbow, shoulder to shoulder, watching the show, and I'm on stage and everyone's exhaling at me, you know, like I'm in a firing line. Now, looking back, I mean, it was a month ago, but I think about that now. And it's, I really do wonder about that from a performance standpoint, where like how on you have to be to put aside your anxieties and do a performance and know that the room is tense and that people are maybe a little iffy about being there in the first place. And then you're trying
to. And they're all facing you.
And they're all facing me. And if I'm doing a good job, I mean, laughter is an exhale, you know? So it's kind of a little bit, that's where I might need a mini pod.
You know what I was thinking about today? And I think about it a lot because I follow a lot of comedians on Twitter. I'm fascinated by comedians. And I actually worry for people's mental health because I see like a lot of people who sort of like, they're chronicling their daily life every day. It's like they're going to do a reboot of Friends and all, you know, they're doing a mock SNL, they're doing all this stuff in their apartment, all this content going out. And it's just like no income for a year. They're living in New York City. It's not even like they could say, you know what, in addition to pursuing my craft, I'm going to get a restaurant job. That doesn't exist right now. Like, I'm curious your perspective on your friends, how difficult it's been on their mental psyche. Like, are you concerned about people, you know, how they're gonna like continue to carry on? And I just feel like comedians too are so sensitive and in tune with their feelings in a way most people aren't, that it just seems more concerning to me.
I appreciate that very much. And one thing I'll say about that is, and I really do mean this from the bottom of my heart, there have been people who have reached out on direct message on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, just saying you guys should be essential employees too, because you bring us so much happiness and so much relief and so much joy. And I mean, it brings me to tears. I'm an incredibly sensitive person. And I did a month of microdosing mushrooms in December, and that made my brain even soggier. And you can push me over with a feather right now, man. But I'll tell you that we check in on each other. We have a virtual hang that the Comedy Cellar put together that we can all go like chat with each other and at least see each other's faces and make each other laugh and all of that. Steve Lacey, I know you've noticed, like I'm going on like other comics are and just putting up 1 minute clips periodically, peppering them through, just not only to keep my ball in the air a little bit, but also just to try to offer a minute of respite and just forget about things for a while. And I hope this joke makes you laugh. And it's brutal to go through thought processes that I have. And I can't speak for other comics, but the way my brain works is no matter what circumstance I'm in, I have a filter where things stop and I go, well, there's something very funny there. And I write and I can't get it out. I don't have a stage to share it right now. And right. That's something that really hurts because, you know, music, you can play a song and you can put it out there and you can, I go back and listen to, you know, I Never Needed You Like This Before, or the songs that Trey is putting out and all these other things. And you can go back and listen to a song over and over. There's only so much you could do with a joke. You know, if mm-hmm. I put out a video and go, hey guys, here's a thought I had, blah, blah, blah. Yes, it is something, but it's not what it was. There's no feeling like telling a joke to a crowd and feeling that guttural, like, automatic response.
And this is actually a real question, not a setup for a joke. When your wife comes back from working with COVID patients 17 hours a day, is she actually a good audience for a joke, or is she like, Jesus, just leave me alone? Like,
dude, when she comes home, I hide under the desk with a bottle of Lysol, garlic, rosary beads. I'm scared to death of her. We're at a point, honestly, right now, we're quarantined from each other. Like, she wears a mask in the house. We have 2-bedroom, 2-bathroom. She's in one side, I'm in the other. Like, we're not, like, but I try. And I'm a huge hypochondriac. I'm a huge chicken. I'm scared of her. I basically make her peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And I tell her, you know, I put a note in it. And it's like, you know, mom's proud of you. Good luck. Like, just to get a little giggle out of her. But she's her and the other nurses and other healthcare workers are the heroes, man. And I would do anything. I would give every penny I have to them if they needed it right now. And I hope to God that they have the resources that they need, you know? And, but to answer your question, I think that, we're all a little bit scared about the finance thing. I'm working on a book. Like, I'm writing a book and I'm working on a couple ideas for other podcast series, you know, that maybe just, I don't know. I feel like life is going to be 4.0 coming out of this, man. You know what I mean? Like, everybody's going to look at stuff different.
Yeah.
You're on mute, Steve. The dude. There you go.
So, Mike, one thing I'll say is, yes, even though, especially for comedians, it is very challenging to, you know, create and be as funny as when there's a crowd. But one thing we need probably now more than ever is great comedians in whatever form, because, you know, you guys help us through, you know, and there has been a lot of comedy on Facebook and, you know, all the different funny memes out there. So there's a lot of comedy going around to help ease the pain.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you can figure out how to do it, maybe you'll rise up to the top. So this might be your time to shine. You know?
Yeah, totally, brother. I appreciate that. And props to all of my co-workers that are really doing an amazing job. And, you know, it's kind of funny. It's one of those things, and I don't know if you guys relate to this, but when I have all the time on my hands, I find it hard to get the most done. Mm-hmm. I feel like when I'm busy, I'm banging out quality stuff and I can rip through a bunch of jokes, like, you know, and I know I need them, and I know I have an idea, and it's like the cylinders are firing. When I'm in a situation like this where I could sit, and I'll go, you know what, tomorrow's another, let me save something to do for tomorrow. And that's a bad way for me to be. Like, that personally, I don't know if you guys are the same way.
But too much time is overwhelming. That's why I've been doing a ton of stuff in Steve's garage, just helping him sort out.
Yeah, no, thanks for helping me, Steve.
No problem, man. I need to take my mind off the news.
Dude, if you're cool to hang for a bit, I know that if you have other obligations, cool. I wanted to ask Steve Lacy, and I'm wondering, dude, if you're wondering this too. Steve, you're in Manhattan, and you are bringing us the news still, and what's that like? How has that process changed?
Well, so there's way less people in the building, first off. We got a lot of people working from home. Our weather guy's broadcasting from home. We've got
from his TV, man. I saw that.
It's unbelievable. Like, you're right. I mean, we were joking on Twitter the other night, but it's like, that was the one thing in our career we could never do. Working at home was never a thing we would be able to do. So to see it actually happen has been crazy, you know?
Yeah.
But like, they've set up the computer so producers can produce from home. You know, when I do the show now, I still work out of the station because it's easier for me to just go there. I live close by. I'd rather be on set, the professional production, the lights, the audio and everything. They're trying to replicate it at home since I'm close enough.
Yeah.
But there's only like, you know, during the 10 o'clock news, there'll be a reporter who's 10 feet away by design. There'll be a person next to the camera, our floor manager, it's called, a union, you know, position, being like, all right, camera one, camera two. And now the weather guy's gone. That's it. There's only three of us.
Wow.
So it's been pretty wild, you know?
What was it like before? How many people were in the room before?
I mean, reporters in and out. There's a reporter on the desk. Oh, tonight in politics, so-and-so joins us 3 feet away. The weather guy came to the set afterwards. You know, there was sort of all this interaction and things like that. And I mean, and also, I mean, there was a ton of people, dozens and dozens of people behind the scenes you would never see, who were all right next to each other, you know, at desks producing scripts. That's all gone. The weird thing for me totally has been, I've been doing this almost 20 years now, so it's been a long time since I've been nervous before a newscast, but particularly I feel like at the start of this, like it was overwhelming delivering such bad news every night. And the first time in a long time, I felt the eyeballs on me. I felt the weight of people watching. I knew like, oh, wow, people are going to turn on the 10 o'clock news right now and see how many people died in New York. What's the latest number? And it was like, it was weird for me to feel it in a way that I feel like almost knocked me off my game for a minute. You know, it was like I hadn't been overwhelmed by the potential eyeballs, because we're just in a room doing it to a camera. Unlike you, the audience is completely an ephemeral idea. We don't know who's watching. If it's one person or a million, it's the same process. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was weird just sort of feeling like this feels like a heavy moment, you know?
And you're dealing with some really heavy subject matter too.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And like knowing people who are watching who are maybe affected by it, you know, it was just, it was a reality check for sure. You know,
I think about that. And when you and I first spoke, when you were on the podcast a while earlier, I think I even asked you that question of like, when you have a story that is so heavy, like as a human, cause you're I love you. We bullshit all the time. And I mean, you're such a great dude. Yeah. Two great dudes. I think that's going to be the name of this episode. Two great dudes and a mic. But what?
I like that. That's good.
Because I don't want to make Porta Potty our. That's ours. We're patenting
that. We need to get a patent.
That's the three of us. That's how we're. Dark Tank, here we come, dude. Fuck yeah. But I guess, you know, I always think about like, how do you, as an empathetic person, separate yourself from the words that are coming out of your mouth and the impact that it's having, and how do you do
well that? You know, it basically in a normal case of a newscast, it's always just this stacking of disparate stories that aren't connected to each other, which actually provides me, I think, the emotional distance. It's like, this crazy thing happened, this silly thing happened, this bad thing happened, this weird thing happened, and it's just so discordant stacked on top of each other that it almost doesn't make sense as a whole. And that's what keeps you mentally able to sort of deliver them without getting too bogged down in the details of any one story. That's what's different, I think, about coronavirus, is just that they're all connected. They're all, and the human toll of them is that that's the very essence of the story that you can't get around. And when you're delivering the story, you're shocked by it, which a lot of things you maybe over time you learn not to be in news, but this one, you can't really get around that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. As a dad of life, the dude is the dad. What's it like with like, you know, how do you talk with your kids about like this whole thing? Like, have you, you know, what's that?
It's been a tough time because, you know, my son, Jesse, it's his senior year. So he's missing out, you know, semester of his senior year. You wait for that.
Hell yeah. Such an important time.
And so now, you know, but we're still having fun. Like we're playing a lot of pool in my basement. So we barely use a pool table ever before, but now it's getting a lot of use, and he's getting pretty good. But, you know, it's been the positive side is I've been spending a lot of time with my kids and doing stuff with my daughter, Jamie, and, you know, playing cards. And
yeah,
we've been taking long hikes around Croton and keeping in shape, and it's been really nice in that respect, but it has been tough though.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, that is a very important point that, and you mentioned about comics, Steve Lacy, we were talking about that, and I've had conversations with friends where it's like our bodies are thanking us so much for, I mean, we live on the road as comics. It's like, we're you know, you say we got a gig, we go there, we drive there, we fly there, we stay in shit hotels in the mall, and it's 8 days in a casino, and you're eating, you know, square pizza out of the shitty cafeteria with the dealers and the chip counters. And we live like garbage sometimes, you know, on the road. And I feel more physically rested and mentally rested than I have in my, I can't even remember the last time. I really feel healthy in the, you know, take away the, you know, mental.
Physically healthy.
yeah, mentally I'm a complete puddle, but I mean, physically I actually feel good. I'm sleeping more. I'm, you know, it's weird. So you bring up a good point.
It has been a good reset, I think, for the, you know, the value of, right, taking care of yourself. But on the flip side, we are still Americans. So what do? We're quarantined. I mean, you know, I probably put on 15 pounds during this, which is so uniquely American
to be put on,
you know?
Yeah, totally. Dude, do you guys have a grocery, how do I put this? Like when you guys get your grocery, my wife went to the grocery store today without telling me. And then she calls me and she goes, get up, I'm coming home with groceries. And we have to, you know, mask, gloves, bag, Lysol, bleach wipes, the whole nine. Do you guys have a assembly line process?
All that. And you know, doing it, whatever store I'm going into. And I try not to go in more than once a week, but I'll wear the mask and the gloves and try to keep my distance from everybody. And then when I bring the groceries in, you got to wipe them all down. And
yeah, I went yesterday. The thing that was awesome about it was they socially distanced. They wouldn't let that many people in. So when you were inside, it felt almost like you were private shopping.
Wow.
There was no, like the last time I'd been to the same place, it was a mob scene, you know?
I mean, it's eerie seeing pictures of Manhattan and how empty it is. I mean, you look at, I mean, I told you guys, Steve, we talked about it. I had the honor, absolute honor, of performing at Radio City Music Hall earlier this year, opening up for the Impractical Jokers. That's literally huge. The highlight of my life. And now you look at pictures, and they always tend to show, for some reason, that block in these pictures where the roads are vacant and the lights are shut off, and it's like, holy shit. Like, just the...
It's crazy.
It's wild, you know, like, do you get out, go for walks? Do you see people, like, are people being cool? Are people being friendly? Like, is there still a bunch of
I walk the dog to Central Park every day. So I walk, you know, along Fifth Avenue, Madison, all this sort of stuff. It's empty. People now are pretty much all wearing masks. I feel like everyone's petrified of each other because I'm always doing the dog walk. And I used to be always the guy. If I was walking to work or something, I would stop and talk to 10 dogs on the way, like, oh, you know, make bullshit talk with the owner and stuff. That has been completely cut off, and it's so weird now. I feel like if you were ever to go up to a person and be like, oh, cute dog, you know, they'd be like, get away from me.
Yeah, I did that.
It's a totally different world now. Yeah, it's a bummer, because that's what I love about New York, is just that sort of BSing on the street, and that's, like, super over right now, you know?
Yeah, it's very strange, and every picture is so, like, jarring to me, just when you see, you know, the West Village or Central Park or, you know, Times Square, and it's, like, literally just tumbleweed.
Yeah.
It's very odd.
We use a live camera that's from the Fox News building that's on 6th Avenue, so we'll take that a lot. That's why you see a shot. Radio City's in the shot. And it's like, we were using it the other day, like, 5:12 p.m. There was like one car in the shot. I mean, it's just like, if you dropped into your life now, you'd be like, what is going on?
Yeah, totally. No. Totally. You know, it's a funny thing I wanted to mention too. The dude you mentioned, you go to the store and you try to, like, get it all done in a week. And I found myself when I was in the grocery store last time, if someone entered my aisle, I felt like Pac-Man, where I was, like, running away from the ghosts, you know, like, I would take a sharp left and get it, you know. But what I ended up doing was I was just kind of, like, panic grabbing anything within my, like, arm's reach. And I ended up grabbing Fluff, which I haven't eaten in shit. I don't remember the last time I had, like, a peanut butter and Fluff sandwich, like a Fluffernutter. And boy, I'm tapping into, like, some weird child that still lives in me. Are you guys doing any fun eating or fun snacks or fun anything that you want to share with the listeners? That's like, you know, I'm watching Police Academy and I'm eating Fluff sandwiches. I mean, it's pretty cool. I'm going back to being a 10-year-old that, you know, got a snow day.
No, I've been making some stuff at home. I've been making these badass grilled cheese with tomatoes and avocado, and that's one, you know, but I've been cooking other stuff too, but it's been trying to get a little more creative on the stove.
Yeah, it's been like elevated junior high for me. It's been a ton of candy, and then I've been making pizza quick sauces, which I've been making since I was seventh grade. But Anna has this like fancy sourdough bread, but then literally pizza quick sauce, cheese.
That's kick ass.
Yeah.
I recommend peanut butter and fluff next time you guys go to the store. Dude, is there anywhere where anyone can find and listen to anything that you have out at the moment, or where they can follow you on social media or anything like that?
Yeah, well, I've got Steve Pollock on Facebook.
Cool.
And there's a Dude of Life page set up on Facebook as well. And awesome. I know Facebook, I've got to set up an Instagram too. That's on my to-do list over this break.
I think you do. I would love to see you on Instagram. Me and Steve are on there quite a bit, and we
I'm on Twitter as well.
As what? What's the handle?
Dude of Life.
At Dude of Life. Great. That's awesome. And Steve Lacy, are you able to get into your art more at this point?
Well, so it's interesting. I haven't been to the studio to sort of observe social distancing in a couple of weeks, but I've been, every time I'm at home, I'm on Photoshop. So I've been doing the digital end of that big time, which has been very helpful to me. I love just getting lost in pixels, just doing these images of Eddie Van Halen slash just like real. That's been very therapeutic for me.
Can you do one of me, and can you do one of the dude?
I can.
I'll buy the dude one, dude. You got to buy the one of me.
You got a deal.
Be an honor.
You've gotten a lot accomplished in this conversation.
I'll do one of you, me, and the dude at the Penzi.
Yes.
Better times.
Those really were the great times. I don't want to keep you guys. I know you guys have families to get to. And I just want to tell you both, I love you and thank you so much for being here. And if you have, and Steve Lacy, if you'd like to share your social media, so everybody that's listening.
Steven Lacy is the Twitter, Stevenlacy. Oh my God, amazing story, real quick, last night. We were during the dinner and a movie, and all of a sudden I get a mention, and it's, do you remember that whole thing with Lil Nug, Ghost Girls, like she went to Coachella and that whole thing? Yeah. All of a sudden I get a mention, who the hell is that Steven Lacy and why has he blocked me? And then that became like, oh my God, it's hysterical.
That's fantastic.
Well, that's really neat. And everything. I was like, so Magna Ball brought everybody together.
That's so funny. Yeah. And dude, I notice you have a David Welker hanging behind you. A really great poster. I think that might be a Welker. No, it looks a little Welker-ish.
Yeah,
he's Welker. He's the man, and I love him. And yeah.
From Alpharetta, 2014.
Nice. He's such an incredible. We'll have him back on soon too. But everyone that's listening, dude, again, it's an honor, and I'm happy to call you a friend, and I'm glad we've had a chance to catch, Ghost of the Forest together, and a couple of other cool things.
Steve, thank you guys so much. Thanks, Mike, for having me on. It's great talking with you. And the main thing is, let's just stay healthy, dodge those particles, and we'll come out of this.
That's right, man. Thank you for the positivity and keep it up. All right, guys. I love you. And everybody, thank you for listening to Amigos. Tune in next week and we will have more special guests.
Take care. Bye.
Ciao.
Love you guys, man. Thank you so much. We'll talk soon, okay?
Later, man.
Peace.
Bye-bye. Adios, amigos.